ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have been studying the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Still we are in the introductory stage. In our last class, we had discussed a very, very important point, what are called the means of obtaining right knowledge. And knowledge is of two types, that which falls within the sensory organs, obtainable and obtained through the five senses plus mind. This is called worldly knowledge. In Vedantic terminology, it is called mithya or changing knowledge, not absence of knowledge, but limited, changing, dependent knowledge. The second type of knowledge pertains to things which is beyond the capacity of the sense organs called atindriya jnana. I gave some examples, whether life is there after death, whether there are other worlds, whether there are other beings in other worlds, and whether there is God really existing, and as Hindus and a few others believe, whether the result of one's own past actions bears fruit in this life, called karma siddhanta, whether it is real or not real. These truths cannot be obtained by any other means. For this purpose, the Vedantic scholars, rishis actually, have found out six means, rather two instruments called pramana. Pramana means a right instrument to obtain right knowledge pertaining to that particular instrument. As an example, telescope is the right instrument to see things which are far away in close proximity. And microscope is that which is to see almost invisible things, magnify them, see them very clearly. Each has its own separate utility and each cannot substitute the other. So, knowledge also, both we require worldly knowledge as well as super sensory knowledge, atindriya jnanam. Our problem is we are placing too much of emphasis on the worldly knowledge and judging even God by its standard. So about these two pramanas are valid means of instruments, valid instruments of right knowledge we discussed, and depending upon the direct perception called pratyaksha, there were other four pramanas: inference called anumana, upamana comparison and analogy, arthapatti postulation or presumption, anupalabdhi non-perception. Now we also have talked about shabda pramana, verbal testimony, apta pramana, the knowledge of the people who have directly experienced God and other worlds, etc., also called Shastra Pramana, also called Veda Pramana. These six means provide a complete knowledge of the mundane world. One important point we discussed, both are necessary. For right knowledge, whether it is worldly or spiritual, always leads to better life, happier life and healthy life permanent life. So we have to use both, but in their own sphere. Now coming to the Veda Pramana, scriptural knowledge, Brahma Vidya, knowledge of Brahman, which is also called Atma Jnanam, or who am I, my true nature, is obtainable only through scriptural Pramana, Shabda Pramana, Veda. So a Bible is a Veda, and a Quran is a Veda, Tripitakas are the Vedas, but we have to be careful here. Even in the Vedas, there are so many types of informations about worldly knowledge. For example, how to attain spiritual progress. That doesn't fall under the Shabda Pramana. It falls under what we call sensory knowledge. You observe certain rules and regulations with regard to the body, with regard to the mind, then our life will be much better, happier, healthier, etc., yielding more happiness. But there is a limitation for this. So in the Atindriya Jnanam, the purpose is to lead us to that goal. Once when anyone reaches that goal, then that is the end of evolution. He will become one with God. And that is the fate of everything in this world, living as well as non-living. Of course, for that purpose, the non-living, the inorganic, must become organic, slowly evolve. That is a wonderful truth discovered by Charles Darwin. We should not neglect. Scientific knowledge is very valid, but within the sensory knowledge. So, Brahma Vidya gives us the right knowledge, and that is also called Upanishad. So this Upanishad has two meanings. Primary meaning of the word Upanishad is knowledge, that which destroys limitations and gives us right knowledge. Right knowledge is that knowledge which has no limitations. The second meaning of the Upanishad is the instrument through which these Upanishads are conveyed. For example, through the mouth of the Guru, the words come out. That is only secondary means. One's own experience is the primary means. Whatever I am talking in these classes, that's my understanding. I can only convey it through words. But you will have to listen carefully and make them your own. Nobody, just by talking, can give that knowledge. Even Sri Ramakrishna, he used to touch people, remove the obstruction, so that the person can make his knowledge their own knowledge. Very cleverly, he used to touch people. So, one meaning of Upanishad is true knowledge conveyed through some instrument. That instrument is called the book, the Upanishad. So, here Shabda Pramana means every Upanishad is a book. That means words. What do the book or books contain? Words. Previously, when writing was not developed, it used to be processed, passed on and processed through words, through sounds coming out of the mouth in the form of words. But words is not Upanishad. The knowledge conveyed by the words is Upanishad. And so long it is theoretical, it is not Upanishad. It must become one's own practical knowledge. This we have to keep in mind. How do we know? Because if Upanishad, the book, can give us, then by this time we would have been free. So all of us are repeating mantras. Mantras are nothing but certain repetition of certain sacred words. We should have got final knowledge, but we don't get, because those words have to be converted into really understanding, knowledge. Only when it becomes knowledge, we are controlled by knowledge, right or wrong knowledge. This is a very important point. If I believe truly, this is the truth, then I am always controlled by what I know. If I know this bottle contains poison. Even if it contains nectar, it can affect me. But if I think, if somebody labels a bottle, this is poison, but I know the label is like that, inside it is pure nectar, amrita, which leads me to immortality, then I will not choose, I cannot choose, because my knowledge never allows me to do anything other than what our knowledge directs us. This is a wonderful point. So if I don't have right knowledge, I will be having wrong knowledge. That is called avidya. Avidya is not absence of knowledge, but wrong knowledge, wrong understanding. I will be guided. For example, all of us are saying by mouth, everything in this world is temporary, changing, dependent, bringing in its aftermath only suffering. But though we are muttering these words, mouthing these words, but really speaking, we don't believe in it. But the day we believe, then we will be better people. Swami Brahmananji was about to give up the body. A doctor came with the name put in the form of three marks across his forehead. Maharaj looked at him and said, "Doctor, the name which you have put on your forehead alone is the reality. Everything else." He was suffering from acute diabetes and he was feeling thirsty. He was asked if he would like to drink lemonade, and somebody, they already had prepared and kept it ready. When it was brought to him, he said, "Pour lemonade Brahman into Brahman." He knew everything was Brahman. He had not at that time, long before, but he did not express it in so many words all the time. But at this time, he could not hide. It came out openly. So, what is it that destroys ignorance, that destroys samsara? Is it the book or the knowledge gained from the book? So, it is the primarily Upanishad means in true knowledge, and then secondarily, the book is an instrument through which we can study the Gita, Upanishads, Brahma Sutras, Bible, Quran, Guru Granth Sahib, Tripitakas, etc., etc. This is what Sri Ramakrishna says. If you are reading an almanac and it is predicted this year, so much of rain will come, fall, and you squeeze the almanac as much as you like, not one single drop of water will ever come out of it. Why? It contains only knowledge. We have to wait for that knowledge to experience in course of time. So, if mantras, muttering of mantras, doing japam of mantras, could themselves destroy our ignorance, then there is no need to learn the meaning. Merely by recitation, one can obtain that knowledge. Now, let us apply this to any Upanishad, but especially since we are studying the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Although, the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad contains so many upasanas, that is, meditations. It contains, most of the time, the highest Vedantic teaching, and it is expressed in two forms. Neti, neti. Not this, what you know, not this ego with which you identify. That which is negotiating, negating, that is not Brahman. And that instrument, egotism, itself is not Brahman. Na, na iti, na iti. Two words, why? Use two words. First word is to deny the result, the knowledge obtained through the instrument. Second, to deny the instrument itself. Once that instrument is destroyed, negated, or merged in Brahman, what remains will be Brahman, which is expressed in the form of Aham Brahmasmi, the Mahavakya. So, all this is, as we discussed, one of the biggest. Brihat means the biggest. Not only in size, in quality, in expression, and containing the highest truths. So this Brihadaranyakopanishad, if anyone studies, really speaking, he need not study any other Upanishad. But the secret is, unless we start studying and absorbing slowly, beginning with perhaps Katha Upanishad, then slowly Mundaka Upanishad, then Isavasya Upanishad, then Kena Upanishad, our ideas of understanding these Upanishads also will grow slowly. That is very important for all of us to understand. And then when we enter into this either Chandogya or Brihadaranyaka, our understanding will be much greater. So all the important ideas contained in all the other Upanishads, some say there are 200, some say there are 108. So, but there is one Upanishad called Mukti Upanishad. There in 108 are mentioned. But Shankaracharya has taken the trouble to write only commentaries, beautiful commentaries, unparalleled commentaries, most clarifying commentaries on only 10 Upanishads, and Brihadaranyaka happens to be one. So this Brihadaranyaka contains all the important teachings from every other Upanishad, but we may not be immediately able to connect to them because of the change of language, metaphor, etc. This Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is a complete comprehensive text. So if, because it is big, if anyone asks, where are these ideas, we can confidently answer. They are in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. You go and search. Of course, most of the people cannot search because it is so big. But it is there. Now, as I mentioned, Shankaracharya had chosen, and he must have, he knew all the Upanishads by heart, and his intellect could remember like AI, everything. Instantaneously he will find out the same idea is found in this Upanishad, in that Upanishad, in the other Upanishad. How do we know? Throughout his Bhashyams, this idea is there somewhere in the Brihadaranyaka. This is there in the Isavasya. So he will quote the mantras themselves. In those days, this classification, this is chapter 1, is section 1, is mantra number 4 or 5. That classification was not done at that time. But he would remember the mantras. And if you obtain the printed Upanishads in Sanskrit or their exact translations with Shankara Bhashya, you will see all these references in either parenthesis or openly, because that is the Shankara's methodology of substantiating what he wants to understand us, wants to make us understand, that you refer to this, this is the idea there. And there are many ideas which we will never understand without Shankara Bhashya. The simple reason for that is, first of all, it is in archaic language. Secondly, there are so many words, as you know, language changes, is changing all the time. Even now, I cannot understand certain words, even as recently as 6 months. What is it called? Double down, doubling down. I didn't understand. I know doubling means 2 into 2 is 4. 4 into 4, 16. What does this mean? Doubling down. That means a person emphasizes something very strongly, repeats it many times. That is called doubling down. So new words are added. Old words naturally go out of vogue, and so many words they have gone out. And the mystics, the rishis, they also used certain words, and sometimes there doesn't seem to be any etymological connection between what they uttered and what the Upanishad wants to convey. But for the commentaries of people like Shankaracharya, so Shankaracharya had written commentaries on 10 Upanishads, and Mandukya Upanishad is the smallest, having only 12 mantras. Then
Isavasya Upanishad, 18 mantras. So like that, these are the two small mantras. Like in Bhagavad Gita, we have two chapters which have only 20 shlokas, 20 verses. So the 12th chapter, Bhakti Yoga, and the 15th chapter, Purushottama Yoga, they are the smallest chapters in the whole of the Bhagavad Gita, which has a totality of 18 chapters. And of all the commentaries on these 10 Upanishads, naturally, there are two Upanishads which are very big. First comes the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, second comes the Chandogya Upanishad. And on Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Shankaracharya's commentary is the biggest. And Shankaracharya's language is a superb language. Shankaracharya's hymns, if you are studying, or his Prakarana Granthas, or his what is called Advaitic texts. A Prakarana Grantha is a special type of book emphasizing particular theories and elaborating on them, specially like Dridrishya Viveka, then Viveka Chudamani, of course, the most one. So like that, so many Prakarana Granthas, besides his hymns, even Pratasmarana Stotram, etc., they are also profound Advaitic truths. Then Nirvana Shatkam, Kaupina Panchakam, Manisha Panchakam, everything in a simplified way, the highest Advaita Vedanta is squeezed into. So, Shankaracharya's commentary on the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it is called Shankara Bhashyam, is one of the biggest, runs into hundreds of pages. And every Upanishad is practically in the form of a sutra, means very brief statement. Why do we say brief statement? Because we have to remember, these Upanishads are the expressions of realized souls. They have to use language. And at the time of their living, thousands of years back, there was the art of writing not developed yet. That is why it is called Shruti. One meaning of Upanishads or Vedas is called Shruti. Shruti means the knowledge that passed from the mouth of the teacher in the form of the teaching or words. And these words are heard, hearing. Shruti means hearing. And this continued for a long lineage. That is why it is called Shruti Sampradaya. And based upon this, what these people heard, and when they were teaching, they used to quote some worldly examples to clarify the points, simplify the points, etc. And later on, some of them took the most important points, wanted to present them to ordinary people who are sincere, who are trying to lead a spiritual life, but do not have access to Sanskrit language or even to a great teacher, in the form of Puranas, mythological stories, and so many illustrations of kings, great sages and saints, great men, all these are illustrated in the form of stories, etc. Like as we see, Amarachitra Katha, it contains the essence without too much deviation from the original, but easily understandable by children. And we are all grown-up children, whom Swami Vivekananda used to call mustached babies. So the Upanishad is in the sutra form. And the Rishi used to, or his disciple, used to try to understand it from the exposition of his guru. And every sutra in a very abridged form, that is also became a mnemonic. Mnemonic means a simple way of remembering. So this is a system of improving. Most of you must know about it. If you are going to a shop to buy certain items and your memory is not good, this system is very useful. So I want to buy a kite for my child. So, kite is played by the child. And the child requires milk, chocolates, etc. And there are wonderful chocolates. And these chocolates have to be preserved. So, they have to be kept in refrigerator. And so, I have seen today that refrigerator, milk is not there. So, my wife reminded me of it. And biscuits are not there. And oats are not there. Breakfast cereal is not there. So, associating in a picturesque form and containing. So, all that you have to need to remember is that a kite, your child, and child plays with the kite, and after playing he becomes hungry, then he requires food, favorite food, and that food has to be preserved, and the place where we preserve is refrigerator, and refrigerator is meant for storing so many items. So, all these things are to be done. So, this is the mnemonic. So, as soon as this sutra, first sutra is stated, what it means, a brief explanation, then expansion of that expression, which is called vyakhya or commentary. So, as soon as a disciple remembers this sutra, all that he has to memorize is this sutra, and the teacher, skillful teachers, they weave a web of beautiful stories, illustrations, analogies, metaphors, and parables, etc., like Sri Ramakrishna, immediately he remembers it. But in course of time, these people who knew what the teacher had taught has been lost. The sutra remained. But these great souls, like Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, from their own respective point of view, they tried to interpret, but I think nobody could explain so beautifully word by word concept of this commentary. And Shankara's language is also superb language, very mellifluous language, like Jayadeva's Gita Govindam, like Krishna Karnamritam of Bilho Mangala. Even the very language attracts us so much. So, every Upanishad is in the form of the sutras. That is why commentaries are required. And if we are sincere, God provides us, God himself comes down in the form of these great acharyas. And so, these great acharyas, they expound each one of them according to their understanding. And what these people understand is suitable for a particular type of people. So, our learned and experienced teachers, like Swami Vivekananda, they divide these, they also say, Dvaita is the state in which we should be. We are not in the state of Dvaita, not even in the state of Dvaita. Why? We are all seeing difference, that's not the point. Dvaita believes God exists, a firm, sincere, absolute faith, God exists. But I am not God, God is not me. He contains everything, but he is separate from everything. We are all separate from each other, and the world is separate from God. God is separate from us. God is separate from the world. God is separate from each jiva. He is separate from everything. The five differentiations Madhvacharya gives, or Dvaita philosophy gives. So, that is the state. What is it? Definitely, 100% God exists. Okay, then I have a lot of desires. I have to pray to him, and he is very compassionate, and he will fulfill if I sincerely pray to him. His grace descends, and therefore I have to pray. Even though I am seeing the difference, even though I have a lot of worldly desires, but more and more I try to rely upon God rather than upon cleverness. How to become rich, how to obtain a position, how to flatter, how to butter other people so that I can get their uchchishta livings. No, I pray to God. So, it takes a great spiritual practice even to become a Dvaitin. Then this next step is, so not only God is different, but He is also one. He is everything. Everything is in Him. Like a body, our physical body contains billions and billions of cells. Every cell is different. One cell dies, another cell is born. Every cell has its own specialized function. So one cell cannot replace the other cell, but all are related. This is called Visishtadvaita. God is everything. In that everything, everything is contained in God. He pervades everything, but everything is different from everything. But at the same time, everything is related to everything, and we are all related. So this is called Visishtadvaita, which is called unity in diversity. There is diversity, but there is also unity. This is a higher progress in our right understanding. Then comes the final understanding. There is no difference. Everything is only Brahman. We can't even call it one. Simply, we have to experience. So, God is, has to be transformed into I am that God. Brahma Asti must be transformed into Brahma Asmi. This is how Swami Vivekananda interpreted the lowest step leading to a higher step, and that middle step leading to the highest step. So there is no need for us to quarrel which is right, which is no. But of course, the acharyas, their followers, they never cease to quarrel. They always think their teacher is correct. That is the highest philosophy, and everybody else is ignorant, if not downright stupid and evil. This is how we have to understand through the eyes of Sri Ramakrishna's teachings and Holy Mother's teaching and Swami Vivekananda, direct disciples, that teacher of our lineage. That is what Ramana Maharshi has also taught exactly, and that is squeezed into one beautiful aphorism that is called Jato Mot Tato Pat. You sincerity is the only condition you need. Be sincere. Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam. Bhagavad Gita, the 17th chapter. It affirms anybody who is sincere, because sincerity is a manifestation of divinity, and that person, in course of time, God makes him understand the right thing. He manifests in the form of right understanding, buddhi yogam dadamiham, and devotees also pray to Mother Gayatri, dhiyo yonaha prachodayat. So this is how we have no quarrel with any. Advaita has no quarrel with anybody. It accommodates everybody. So whatever accommodates everything without any conflict and yet becomes most beneficial and helpful, that is the take up by Sri Ramakrishna and Swamiji, Holy Mother, direct disciples, and their lineage, all of us. So this commentary by Shankaracharya, and we have to call him Adi, original Shankaracharya. Why? Because he established four centers. He had four important disciples. He had many disciples, but four most important disciples. And all these disciples, being a very wise man, not only spiritually, but practically, he knew that when two Indians, be they householders or monks, soon they start quarreling, overpowered by Mahamaya, egotism, and they spoil the whole lot. And wisely Shankaracharya divided the whole of India into four parts, the east, the north, the west, and the south, established four branches called mathas. And each one of his disciples, he established as the guiding head of each center, and he told them, your sphere of sovereignty will be only this area, so the other person cannot come. And if you want to guide some disciples, Shankaracharya had created 10 names, and 3 he had given to Sringeri Pitha, and sometimes two, sometimes three, according to what he foresees right to the other three centers. So these Shankaracharyas had only the right if they are giving monastic names, accepted monastic disciples, they can only pass on that particular name which their guru has given, Bharati, etc. So this is how Shankaracharya Bhashya is there. It's huge. And then his own disciple Sureshwaracharya, he studied this, his guru's Bhashyam, and he felt as a separate person, perhaps if this is interpreted in this way, it would make better sense. So he wrote another commentary on Shankara Bhashya, and it goes by the name Vartika. This Sureshwaracharya has got a title, is called Vartikakara, because he has written three Vartikas, that is commentaries upon his own commentary, upon his guru's commentary, on Taittiriya Bhashya of Shankaracharya and on Dakshinamurti Stotra called Manasavallasa. So that is how we get three Vartikas. And a Vartika is even much bigger than the original Shankaracharya's commentary. So what is the speciality of this commentary upon the commentary? It is Uktam, Duruktam, Anuktam. So what has been said by his guru, if the disciples understands this is absolutely right, he keeps it as it is, trying to express it in his own words without any change. Duruktam. And there are some expressions of his own guru. The disciple Sureshwaracharya might think, perhaps if this meaning is added or replacing what his guru has written, it will give a more unified meaning, better meaning, easy to comprehend. It is called Duh Uktam means not properly interpreted. But because he is a Shishya, disciple, with tremendous Shraddha, it is not a criticism, it is only improving his guru's commentary. And then Anuktam, some places, maybe Shankaracharya should have commented, but did not comment. Then Sureshwaracharya steps in and completes what he thinks should have been included by his guru. This is called Anuktam, not commented upon. So, improperly commented upon and rightly commented upon on all these three aspects in his own language, Sureshwaracharya. Acharya means a teacher. Sureshwara was his name. So what he had written goes by the name Vartika. That's why he was called Vartikakara, author of the Vartikas. So that is the speciality about Sureshwaracharya Vartika. So now, Shankaracharya, he has got a very speciality. What is that speciality? That on every Upanishad, before his commentary starts on the original text, he writes an introduction that is called Sambandha Bhashya. Sambandha Bhashya paves the way to what is about to come, and certain concepts he wants to explain in a better way. So this is what is called introductory bhashyam, and through this introductory commentary, Shankaracharya wants to elucidate, make clear to people like us that whenever you come across certain words, for example, karma, for example, upasana, for example, jnanam, what do they mean? What relationship they bear to each other, and what the opponents, what is their opinion about these concepts? Because to understand the commentary, we have to have very good comprehension of these basic concepts. So in this Bhashya, so what Shankaracharya wants to say, what is the relationship between ritual and knowledge, between karma kanda and Jnana Kanda? As you know, as we all know, that according to the classical classification, every Veda is divided into Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda. Karma Kanda is a preparation for making every spiritual, sincere spiritual aspirant to convert him into a really speaking, fit, worthy spiritual aspirant. And what would be the obstacles? Unfulfilled desires. So, fulfill some desires. The Veda, Karma Kanda part of the Vedas do not say, go on doing this forever and ever. No, no, no. Do it, fulfill some of your desires. That's what Sri Ramakrishna used to say. Fulfill some small desires. Big desires, when they come, did Sri Ramakrishna say that you fulfill them? Definitely, he said, if your desire is strong, you have no other way but to fulfill them. And whenever we fulfill, like Rakta Bija, like the demon called Rakta Bija, every fulfillment increases the thirst, strengthens the desire, and suffering is inevitable. And after some such experiences, we wake up and say, how can I have this ananda without suffering? Then says, you now go to the next step. That is called add mental contemplations called upasanas, about which I will briefly discuss in our next class, because very important to understand what is a upasana. What is a upasana? It is a link, a bridge between Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda. On the one hand, it reduces the physical rituals into purely mental rituals. On the other hand, it relates every ritual to a higher aspect of divinity called gods, and in our terminology, first to Virat, then to Hiranyagarbha, then to Ishvara, and finally to Brahman. There is no other way. Step by step, we have to go through them. Some people are fortunate because they have practiced already. Not that they have fallen from the sky and they find themselves ready to enter into Jnana Kanda. No, no, no. They have practiced so long, like some of the musical geniuses, like Mozart, for example. How many janmas he had practiced, God alone knows. But in this life, his talents have come to the fore, and he started manifesting them, and he became unparalleled great, one of the greatest creators of symphonies, etc. But Hindus must believe this is the accumulated result of many, many years of prolonged practice. Any field, scientific field, aesthetic field, or administrative field, some are born with higher intelligence, some are with lower, but everybody will evolve, both mentally, intellectually, aesthetically, morally, finally spiritually. There is no other way. So, we will have to understand what is this upasana, how it works, which we will deal in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapatme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhuhu. May Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.